is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads, I wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hey, this is James Leith from Unleash the Athlete, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. And I didn't see that coming, man.
I have to say, I know I said that I felt like the Heat were going to win a game, but I don't know that to my core I really believed it.
And not game two, certainly.
Certainly not. I mean, Nuggets, it's the Nuggets' first home loss since March, Mike.
Yeah, March 12th with Jokic in the lineup.
With Jokic, yeah. Well, first home loss since March, I should
correct.
Say.
Correct.
Yeah. So, honestly, who would have thought that inserting Kevin Love into the starting lineup? And he didn't play at all, I don't think, in the fourth quarter, but, he made a difference when he was out there. He actually was doing stuff. And I know I jokingly texted you in the third quarter. I think he played 9 straight minutes. And I said, I texted you saying Kevin Love's going to need oxygen. Because I don't think he had played that many straight minutes since, he got to Miami. So anyways, the Heat came through. They needed to come through. Bam, again, with a second great game. I know that I saw this on Twitter. I don't remember who I saw it from, but they really need to match Jokic's minutes with Bam. Bam needs to just suck it up and play that many minutes, because the two stretches that the Nuggets really had in that game were the two stretches that Bam were sitting out. I think the Heat controlled the game pretty much the rest of the way. Would you agree with that statement?
Yeah, I mean, the difference was the beginning of the fourth quarter. Jokic sat out, I think, a minute and 20 seconds, and it was – plus
8-2.
Yeah, it was 8-2. Yeah, it was 8-2 in that minute and 20 seconds. And that just completely flipped the momentum. You go into the fourth quarter, if you're Denver, up 8, and you lose that lead in next to nothing in no time. And then you bring Jokic back. And obviously Miami continued to play well even once Jokic was back in the game. But that certainly swung the momentum, because Miami had kind of gotten back in control of the game towards the end of the third quarter. And then I think it was a 6-2 run maybe at the end of the quarter for Denver to put them back up 8, and felt like they were pretty much back in control of the game. And then, but again, how many minutes can any of these guys play? I mean, what you're asking Jokic to do in terms of carrying the load, which obviously he carried a huge load offensively tonight because they really weren't getting much from anybody else. And that minute 20, though, I thought was the difference in the game. I mean, I thought that just swung the momentum completely, where it looked like Denver had control to giving Miami a little bit of life.
Yeah, and then the other thing too, Mike, I'm glad that Mark Jackson knows who Nikola Jokic is now.
He does. He does.
He didn't put him on his MVP ballot.
He did not.
And he tonight said that he's one of the top 10 centers of all time in the NBA.
Yeah, top 10, right?
Yeah, he said top 10, and you didn't put him on his MVP ballot. Get out of here, you idiot. Get out of here. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm with you. I could do without Mark Jackson. I don't mind Van Gundy. He's decent, and I don't mind Mike Breen. I'd much rather have the TNT halftime crew and post game crew.
Did you watch the Charles Barkley video I sent you?
No,
I sent you a video on the Twitter about him and Rocky and their history together.
Okay,
and then he was at the game tonight.
I'll have to watch it. I did see Chuck there.
Yeah. So
that and all his potato chip commercials.
There were quite a few of those.
There were
LeBron's in there too. Yeah,
they had that thing. They had that thing on rewind.
Yeah. So, anyways, so Bam stat line tonight: 21-9, 4 assists, 2 blocks, 8 of 14 from the field, and just hustling, big time. Just he seemed to be everywhere when they needed him, you know. And like I said before, like when Jimmy Butler was off the floor, it didn't seemingly make that much of a difference to the Heat. But when Bam was off the floor, it was noticeable. Would you agree with
Jimmy
that?
Jimmy was not, I would say he was very pedestrian. I mean, he had a decent game, but in no way, shape, or form was that I don't know if the best version of Jimmy exists anymore after he turned his ankle and just whether it's general fatigue or whatever it is. I don't think we're looking at any 45 point Jimmy Butler explosions. I think the formula for Miami to win, which look, I don't know if it's repeatable or not, but they shot the ball really well. And in the second half there, in the fourth quarter there, Denver just stopped playing defense for the first 5 minutes, 6 minutes, 7 minutes of that fourth quarter.
Yeah.
And I think at one point Miami was 9 for 10 from the field and 4 or 5 from three in that first 6 or 7 minutes. And that was the difference.
Yeah. Jimmy Butler was asked after the game, what makes the Miami Heat so resilient? You know what he said?
It's the whole
I don't give a damn factor.
Yeah, I mean, look, you don't do what they've done to this point and knock off Milwaukee and then the Knicks and then Boston. And I guess you could say they certainly weren't favored against the Knicks. I don't think anybody was surprised they beat the Knicks, but certainly all of us were shocked when they beat when they beat Milwaukee and then when they beat the Celtics. So
look, their win tonight, Mike, their win tonight is officially the most wins by the 8th seed in the postseason, passing the Knicks, who had 12 wins.
Yeah, I mean, it's not surprising. Look, they continue. I told you back after game one that I just didn't see a path. And even as tonight's game was unfolding, it kind of felt like, I'm not sure how they're going to get it done up until that stretch at the beginning of the fourth quarter.
Duncan Robinson, 10 minutes.
I mean,
that's
4 for 5. Duncan Robinson played really well. I think Lowry played really well and had a couple key assists. I thought they were doing a good job of attacking Jokic in the pick and roll. Like there were a couple of little pocket passes they threw where Jokic read the play correctly. I don't know if you'll remember these replays, but there were a couple plays where guys came off screens and tried to throw that little pocket bounce pass. And Jokic read it that it was going down low and he anticipated and tried to get his hand down there. And both passes were just perfect. And they both led to Miami baskets. And so I think that's what you have to do is you got to try to get Jokic as involved in the play as you can. I mean, I still think that positionally he's where he's supposed to be and he's got just tremendous hands and anticipation. So a lot of times he'll get a strip or he'll get a steal or get his hand on a ball because he's in the right place and he's just so smart.
Yeah.
But the reality is that once guys get to the rim, he's not much of a deterrent other than his just sheer size if he's going up against a guard, but he's not going to be up there blocking shots or doing those kinds of things. And so, plus you can't ask him with all the load that he's carrying on offense. There's only so much you can really ask of the guy. And to be honest, like you look at what happened tonight and Miami got hot. Denver's defense wasn't that great. And the Nuggets just didn't, nobody brought it. Nobody brought their A game except really for Jokic tonight for Denver. Murray was good in stretches, but he also disappeared in stretches. And now second straight game, you got Michael Porter. He's now 4 for 19 from three in the series.
There's some good pictures of when he's taking shots, guys standing under the basket wide open for layups.
He doesn't pass. I mean, I've said this about him for his entire career. I think he's gotten better and he rebounds more and he's certainly more multidimensional than he was.
Yeah.
But his first thought every time he catches the ball is, how can I get a shot off?
And it kind of reminded me of some pictures I saw you sent me earlier this year of someone going to the basket that was ignored.
There you go. Yes, I understand. I'll leave that. I'll keep those editorial comments to myself. But nonetheless, yeah, Michael Porter Jr. definitely loves to shoot the ball. And if he's not going to make them, and look, the whole thing going into the series was, right, that Michael Porter Jr. is 6'10" and the Heat guys that are going to be guarding him are significantly smaller. And so he's going to be able to shoot over them and kind of be unbothered. And to a large degree, that's true. And so he's got to shoot better than 4 for 19. He just has to, because he's going to look to shoot, because that's what the guy loves to do. He's not a natural passer. I remember whatever 3 years ago when I told you at some point, I'm like, it's not even that he doesn't see guys. It's like he almost like fundamentally doesn't even, like his muscles don't even know how to pass the ball. Like he just looks awkward when he's passing the ball. And that's a little bit better than it was, but still, when you watch him, he's got to make shots. I mean, he's got to make shots for Denver to win, and he didn't make enough of them tonight. And Caldwell Pope only had 6. They need more production. If you're not going to get a great, great Murray game, then they need more production out of those other guys. And they really didn't get it. Jeff Green and Bruce Brown, I thought, played decently off the bench, and Christian Brown played well. They just needed a little bit more from, I would say, Porter Jr. and Caldwell Pope. And then obviously Murray had to do a little bit more. Jokic, you couldn't, I mean, dude, his touch around the basket is just, I mean, it's unbelievable. He looks, I don't want to say awkward, but awkward is probably the best word to describe him. I mean, he's just banging into guys and his arms are flailing all around. But as soon as he releases that ball, it's like the softest touch. Like we were talking here at my house today, that almost every shot he takes that hits the rim goes in. He just gets a roll. He gets a touch and he catches the ball. He's got such good hands. I mean, look, he was fantastic tonight, and it wasn't enough because Miami played really, really, really well. Now, they've held Denver to 108 and 104. And I think if you'd have said that to them before game one, that you're going to hold Denver to those point totals in the first two games, I think Miami would have been very happy with that and thought they had a good chance to win one, if not two games, holding them to that, you know, that point total. So kudos to Miami. I did not see this coming in any way, shape, or form. And I'm still not 100% sure quite how they did it, but I think attacking Jokic more and more and more as much as they can, putting him in actions and making him defend, has got to be what they do. And look, this Bam Adebayo, compared to the Bam Adebayo we saw in the last 5 games of that Boston series where he looked shook and lost, he's going to play this well, then night in and night out, they're going to have a chance. They're going to at least give themselves an opportunity. I still don't see how they win this series. I mean, my overall feelings haven't changed, but kudos to Miami and how hard they played and what they did tonight to win this game. Because myself, you, and I don't think anybody else really saw him winning game 2. I just didn't see it.
The only thing I would say is this, Mike. And I think the Heat are the Nuggets not using a timeout down the stretch. Your take on that, Mike? I think
the thing is, and I go back to think about our conversation that we had with John Krikorian, right, who won the Division III National Championship with Christopher Newport. And basically his thought was he didn't call timeout. And what he said about that was he felt like he had confidence in his guys who were going to have the ball in their hands to just go and make a play, and the defense is scrambling and whatever. So, but I think the main point is that you have to know what you're going to do beforehand. Like, that's not a decision that you make in the moment. Now,
well, the other thing was too, they had 2 minutes. I mean, it had been 2.5 minutes since a timeout, so they didn't have a play in mind for that 3-pointer. It wasn't like,
no, but I think you think you're just playing against a scrambling defense. I think that's the thought process, and you think it out beforehand. And so what you do is you go into that situation, you say, hey, if it's a situation at the end of the game where we get a rebound like that and there's 12 seconds or there's 8 seconds or whatever the time cutoff is, you just have that pre-plan. You say, okay, we're just going to go with it and we're going to play. Or we know in that situation, we're going to call a timeout. I don't think that that's a decision. At least it probably shouldn't be a decision that you make in the moment. Is it the right decision? I mean, you can argue it back and forth and there's different philosophies. Obviously now it looks like, hey, we didn't get a shot or we didn't get make a shot. So maybe we should have called a timeout. What I will say about that whole scenario is it looked dicey there for a minute as you're getting into the Jokic Murray handoff and two man game. And maybe you call a timeout there with like 4 seconds to go where it feels like you're kind of scrambling. But at that point, you got to trust your two best guys. And the honest truth is that Murray had a pretty good look at it. I mean, if that thing goes 2 more inches, I mean, it was dead straight and just hit the front of the rim. He created enough space. He got a mismatch guarding. Yeah. I don't know if it's a mismatch, but he got Butler switched on to him. He created space for that shot. He went up for it and it just came up a little short. So I don't know how much better of a shot you're getting. It was kind of an ugly entry into getting that shot. But ultimately, I think that if you told Denver that, hey, that's the shot you're going to get, whether it was a timeout or wasn't a timeout, I think they'd have lived with that shot, I guess. I don't think they're crushed that was the shot they got at the end of the game.
Okay. All right. I'll give you one piece of trivia, Mike, before we make a prediction on what the rest of the series is going to go.
Okay.
Jokic's 68 total points in his first two-time final games are tied with Kevin Durant for third most in NBA history. What two players have scored more than 68 points in their first two finals games?
Ooh, that's a tough one. Well, Jordan, I would guess, is one.
Jordan had 69 points in 1991.
Okay. And I need one other guy that had more, had had the most.
There's something famous that happened that this player did in the finals.
This play in the finals that this player scored.
He did something when he scored one of his baskets.
Did something when he scored one of his baskets. Well, let me think.
It was against a guy we mentioned on the podcast last Tuesday that he did this thing to. When we were talking about the trivia, most playoff games played.
Man, now you're asking me to remember trivia questions from a week ago. You're asking.
Well, I'm trying to give you a hint.
You're asking a lot. I got no idea. It's Allen Iverson. Just give it to me. Okay.
He stepped right. over Derek.
Stepped over Ty Lue. Stepped over Ty Lue.
Yeah.
Come on, man. He stepped over Ty Lue.
Derek all right. Fisher.
AI. Yeah, well, they won that game one.
Wasn't Derek Fisher on that Lakers. Team, though? Wasn't Derek Fisher on that team?
He probably was on that team, right?
Yeah.
I'm guessing, but I couldn't tell you for sure. Yeah. But, yeah, he stepped over Ty Lue.
We did talk about Ty Lue last week, though. It was not in the
trivia. We did. Yeah, we talked about Ty Lue.
Sorry.
And his potential.
That'll be my out. All right, so predictions for the rest of the series. I think now it goes six, Mike, because I didn't anticipate Miami winning one of these Denver games, and I think Miami's going to win. I think they're going to split in Miami. So I think it's going to be 2-2, and then I think the Nuggets win it in Miami game six. That's my prediction.
All right, I can't stick with what I said, which is Denver. Denver in four. So I'm going to continue to ride the Nuggets bandwagon and say Nuggets in five. They go into Miami and win two. Look, I don't think that what we saw tonight is sustainable. I still look at what happened in this game. And like I said, I think that the toughness and will of Miami got it done. But I'm not sure that tactically they discovered anything that kind of shifts the way that I'm thinking about the series. They still have no way to control Jokic. And if guys just knock down a few more shots, I think Denver wins that. And that minute and a half, I still think the minute and a half at the beginning of the fourth quarter is what switched the momentum. So I'm going to stick with Denver. I'm going to say Denver in five. They go into Miami and win two. I still don't see the path for Miami winning games, despite the fact that they won tonight. And look, they got to get Denver putting Jokic in that pick and roll and making him work on the defensive end of the floor. And I think making him score more was probably the right call. I think that's probably the right call. I think if you're Miami, you'd like to see Jokic with 40 and only having 4 assists. as opposed to having 30.
Well, that's what they talked about. They said that was their game plan, Texas, was to make him a scorer, yeah, not a facilitator, right?
Right, which, I mean, again, he's going to score. I mean, the dude scores basically at will. I mean, come on. He shot 16 for 28. And, I mean, he's just ridiculous, the things that he does when you think about his outside shooting, his touch, the pulling the ball off the glass and going the length of the floor, the one that he did that they replayed a bunch of times where he's got the ball in his left hand and he's just bringing the ball up the floor. Or he had that little behind-the-back move. I mean, he's so skilled. And I just don't think Miami has answers for him. And I think the longer the series goes, I think the more he just figures out ways to carve Miami up. And other guys got to make shots. I mean, Michael Porter, I guess if he's going to shoot 4 for 19 in the two games in Miami, then they're going to have a shot. But I still think Denver, to me, Denver's still has to be the overwhelming favorite despite what happened tonight.
Yeah. So, all right, Mike, I think on Tuesday's episode, we'll talk a little bit about the finals and then talk about coaching, and I'll try to have a shooting stars review, Mike.
All right, there we go.
You know what that is, right? You know what that is, right?
The shooting stars?
Yeah. So it's the LeBron movie about his high school.
Oh, okay. There you go. Yep. You're going to have some shooting stars trivia?
I don't know. I've already read that it follows the story. It's okay, but it does a little historically inaccurate. Big shocker. Okay.
All right. Well, hey, you got to take a few liberties, as if the story itself isn't incredible enough that you have to enhance it. But
yeah,
it is what it is. Yep. All right. Anything else?
I got nothing, Mike. All right. Heat culture, baby. Heat culture.
I guess, man. There it is. So we will see you on Tuesday for our regular NBA pod,
one, Mike. I don't know what.
Maybe we won't. Who knows? We always say that, and then we'll end up talking.
And then you'll go on one of your rants, right?
Maybe we got to talk some NBA draft. I don't know. You're gonna do all your draft research between now and then.
Which one of the Thompson twins you like? I'm gonna be at Sear Point all day tomorrow. So,
okay. Well, there you go. I get it. So anyway, I'm sure we'll invent some stuff to talk about on Tuesday that'll carry us for at least a little while, and then we'll be back Wednesday for our Game 3
back
post game wrap, and then you will see this episode in your feed on, I guess it's what now, Monday morning. But we also have another episode with Joel Lincoln, aka the Basketball Barista, so you have to turn into Joel's episode to find out what that means. Please check that out.
We're going to be recording 4 nights in a row this week.
Are we?
Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday.
That's right. Yeah, you're right. Hey, the Hoopheads Pod, it's a busy time. It's a busy time of the year. June's the busiest month, baby.
Yep.
All right. Let's leave it there. Thanks to everyone for checking us out tonight, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies, and most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the Portfolio Guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your Coaching Portfolio Guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads Podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.